Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Whitehaven Coal's Q4 FY23 quarterly production update. All participants are currently on mute. Following the presentation, we will open the call for questions. To queue for questions, you may press star one on your touch tone keypad. Thank you for joining us today. I will now hand over to Mr. Paul Flynn, Managing Director and CEO. Thanks, Paul.
Good morning, everybody, and thanks for taking the time to dial into our final quarter for the FY23 year. As usual, I'll run through some highlights for you and then move through the body of the report and on to Q&A. Now to kick off, just a few highlights on the front page of our report. I'm sure as a number of you have seen already, pricing environment still remains pretty solid. It has drifted off over the course of the year. In the last quarter, in particular for this financial year, we achieved an average of 264 Aussie dollars for the quarter and the full year as a whole, the average there being 445 Aussie dollars. Run-of-mine sales, run-of-mine production, I should say, at 5.1 was a solid result. The total for the year just crept over the 18 million tons per annum at, which was just at lower end of our guidance, but 5.1, 19% up was a good result. Total equity sales and produced coal, 3.3, was steady period on period, and managed sales for the produced coal at 16 million tons at the upper end of our revised guidance. Cash generations, again, has been pretty good, 430 million dollars in the June quarter, and across the year, 4.2 billion, which is very positive and reflective of that strong pricing backdrop. Balance sheet's in good order with cash at 2.65. Just a quick update on the buyback, which I'll get to later. During the quarter, just under 39 million shares purchased during the course of the quarter. I'll summarize that a little bit later on, but hitting that solidly at an average, as you can see there, about the 6.50 dollars and change type level across the quarter. On to safety. Safety's been continuing a good trend for us. Our TRIFR and all the efforts applied across the business to try and improve our safety performance, which by industry standards is pretty good, but obviously this job just requires constant diligence. Our TRIFR at 4.7 was a 13% improvement on last year, which is nice to see that continuing in the right direction. Now moving over to the page there, as I say, 5.1 million tons, 19% up on the March quarter was positive. A 51% increase from our open cut performance, and then Narrabri, of course, going through an extensive change out, which I'll talk about a little bit later. The totals for the quarter there, as you can see, totals and full year, 5.1 and 18.2 for the full year. On the ROM production, saleable coal production at 3.8 and 15.7. The managed sales, as I mentioned, for the year total at 16 and for the quarter, 3.94. The quarterly results cascade down with the same impacts period on period, which is quite positive to round out this year. At Maules Creek, Maules Creek did step up quite nicely in the quarter and at coal production there at 3.4 million tons for the quarter, 48% up on March. That's positive. It ended up being at just under the 9.6 mark for the year after achieving that 3.4, which is very good. Production was certainly a flurry in the back end of the quarter. We've got a hungry market there, which is keen to get every ton of Maules Creek coal. That coal left the mine site pretty quickly and didn't leave us with a whole lot of stock there, but we are building stocks during this period and certainly into the new year as well. That 9.6 was 15% below last year. You obviously know that there's been a big weather impact on this year, which has been challenging for not just ourselves, but for mine production throughout both Queensland and New South Wales. I'm sure those monitoring the port will see the tonnage volumes going through the Newcastle port. On to Narrabri. Narrabri tons at 450,000, obviously a lot less than what we'd done in the previous quarter. Narrabri successfully navigated its way through what's been our largest and most complex relocation for the longwall, obviously going from our deepest panel production in the northern panels across to the shallowest one on the southern side. They're very positive to get that done. Of course, there's further complications of reorienting the equipment to be able to cut to rehand our equipment, so you cut back from south to north, but obviously the tailgate and main gate size swap when you're doing that. So that was a nice job to get that all done, and we're back into production now. There is a relatively cautious ramp up associated with this change. We did experience some supply delays in terms of overhauls of equipment and so on, which delayed the start of or the recommencement of cutting. But we are moving quite well, and once we get the panel squared up, we'll continue to push to greater volumes there. But that looked like a really a solid outcome for everybody to navigate through that on time, subject to those delays and safely as well. The year's total at 5.3 was 9% less than the prior period. Again, first solid strong half, but second half obviously with that change out and a relatively slow conclusion to 110D as we came to the final end of that with a little bit of ground stability type concerns in that deep ground, but very pleased to have all that behind us now and moving ahead in this new financial year. Gunnedah Rocks had a good quarter across both the mines, so Tarrawonga and Werris both did well. Volumes there at Tarrawonga at 730 versus 521, so a positive step up there compared to where we've been in the past. And Werris Creek at 550 versus 260 also came home with a wet sail, which is positive to see that round out in what was otherwise being pretty good operating conditions relative to what we experienced in the first half. So in aggregate, they've ended up with a pretty good total at 1.27 versus 782 in March, and 3.4 for the year's total, which is very positive. Onto our equity sales. So you can see the table that we provided here, and as you know, generally in a softening environment, we're going to realise better than the average for the period from a realisations perspective, and you can see that's exactly what's occurred again in this quarter as it did in the previous. So the average prices I mentioned previously, 264 Aussie versus 400 for March, and you can see that trend across those columns through there just to see that we are in a price environment that has moderated quite considerably. So our thermal coal prices there just on a US dollar basis, 177 for the period. Metallurgical coal prices achieved during that period for us at $218 US, and the average or the index for the quarter was 241. So as a result, you can see that premium. You can see that premium there in a softening environment. And in a stable environment, I just have made that comment there, just in a stable environment, we should be a little bit over the average of the quarter, so a small premium in a stable environment. But because of that softening environment, obviously we bring the lag effect of better priced tonnes from prior periods into the realisations in a particular quarter, giving rise to that 10% in this quarter. The coal reservation policy, I know this is not particularly an exciting piece of the report for anybody, least of all us, but we have delivered and met our commitment during the period. In fact, during the quarter, we supplied a total of 299,000 tonnes under the policy. You may recall that we previously said that we're going to submit about 200,000 tonnes per quarter into this policy, but there was an opportunity to actually to supply to our preferred location and drag in some tonnes from next quarter into this one. And so rather than running the risk of supplying one of the less optimal power station destinations, the opportunity was too good for us to take that up, so we did, and supply it into the preferred power station, which was advantageous to us. Just for pricing there, we've helped everybody understand that the realised pricing, 115, is less than the 125 cap, which the system has imposed, that being at 5,500. So clearly we've put in there less than 5,500 in winning those tenders and so received a commensurately lower price as a result. Moving on to the market more generally, I mean the market itself, as everybody has acknowledged, has been typified, I think, by a market that's well supplied in coal, oil and gas across various markets after what was otherwise a relatively mild winter. And so our customers generally have reasonable stock levels still moving into their summer, And so we've seen buying being relatively modest, although all our commitments are being met, all our customers are taking all the shipments that have been previously scheduled, which is very positive. I made the comment earlier just about tonnages through the port, and you can see there that we certainly have seen volumes left right across the market, and as people deal with the impacts of that first half wet period, and we know that many mines are still dealing with a legacy of lots of water on site and having to move that around in order to meet their obviously their environmental obligations during that period. Moving on, from a cost perspective, we've given you a steer in terms of our costs, unaudited as that might be. $103 is where we think where those numbers will end up. The audit process will bottom that out over the next 6 weeks, and we'll release our results in the third week of August. The buyback summary, again, we've provided you a bit more colour just in terms of the total buyback performance and then the financial year-on-year impacts of the returns to shareholders that we've driven through the buyback period, and then add that to our dividend payments as well during, again, the FY22 and FY23 gives you a sense of where we've been. So in aggregate, since the buyback started, we've purchased 196 million shares. Which is in the order of, depending on which way you calculate it, 19 to 19.5% of the stock since the buyback program started, depending whether you include milestone shares or not. The milestone shares, obviously, subject to restrictions, can't vote, don't receive distributions, and are not subject to the buyback either. But in aggregate, since that program started, we have 196 million shares, which is very positive. And as I mentioned, during the quarter, we were hitting that pretty well to continue that momentum with the buyback program, which I think generally has been well received by our shareholders overall. Just to go through now a couple of comments just on individual projects. I'll just draw out quickly the highlights for you on that. The Narrabri Underground project, you may recall, has had two legal matters to deal with, one being state-based, where there was a challenge to the IPC's approval of Narrabri Stage 3. Fortunately, that's now been dealt with and in our favour, and so we can move on with that one. But you will recall that there is a second matter at the federal level, which encapsulates, I think, 19 projects under what's loosely called the reconsideration request, which asked the federal minister to go back and re-look at a number of different projects there across various industries seeking EVBC approval, one of which is Narrabri Stage 3. And so the minister has set that aside, but there is an appeal. There is an appeal on foot there, which we'll need to work our way through. So very positive that the state-based one has been dealt with. And we're working collaboratively with the federal government. We have joined that matter, even though the case is not against us, just to stay close to it. Highlights just on Winchester South. The positive news there is that the Coordinator General's office has declared the project, our EIS, to be adequate, which is great. Now, it's a slightly different process, as many of you know, compared to the New South Wales process. But having been declared adequate, the government then goes through the process of finalising their report on the project. But that is a very important milestone for us, so we expect a few months now of preparation from the government before the release of their report. So it's nice to see that milestone met. There's a little bit of extra information there just on group exploration activities. I suspect I'm going to get too excited about that. That's a compliance requirement for the ASX requirements, given that we do spend money under the exploration banner, even though that regime is broadly focused on junior explorers, given the importance of exploration to them. To say the balance sheet's in good shape, and after returning $1.6 billion in capital through dividends and buybacks, we've got $2.6 billion on the balance sheet, which was very positive. There is some tax to pay. We are in the PAYG tax regime, as many of you will know. And during the course of this quarter, we did bottom out the reorganisation of our finances in this period, so refinancing our contingent facilities for the various bonding requirements that we have. And our $1 billion previously undrawn facility, we didn't renew that. And so the company's been well capitalised, and you'll see us use cash going forward for many of these purposes. The safeguard mechanism watches, there is quite... there has been some change in regards to the safeguard mechanism, which started on the 1st of July, but as many of you know, there was still some negotiation between the government and the industry on the treatment, or the application of the safeguard mechanism changes and the treatment to open cut and underground mines. Whitehaven has been working very well with a range of other industry participants and with the government to bottom out what we think is at least incrementally better than what was previously proposed for underground mines in particular. And for those who've been watching this, there is a change in the average emissions intensity variable which is used there, and at 0.0653, so that's a little bit more positive from our perspective. And there is a more a useful glide path for the transition from your site-based production variable through to an industry average over time, which again is more sympathetic to the needs of underground miners, of which we have one, and we've also given you an estimate there as to what we think the impact of that will be in this next financial year, about $1 a ton for FY24. Now, that does change over time, so I don't want everyone just to impute that there's only a dollar per tonne payable there. It will change as emissions profiles do change, and of course ours, and industry more generally, but ours more specifically, our ability to minimise exposure to this regime by reducing our emissions, particularly at Narrabri, given the underground mines are generally more emitting from a CO2 equivalent perspective than open cuts are, but then again they measure their emissions in with a high degree of accuracy, whereas the open cut mines are more subject to estimation. So as I say, you shouldn't impute that it's $1 per tonne for the rest of the mine life. We're just giving you a steer for next year, and our mitigation measures and other things will play out over the coming years, and then you'll see us give more guidance in terms of what we think the impact of that is over that period. From a Vickery perspective, early works are continuing there just in terms of getting ready for early mining there. There are a couple of secondary management plans and so on which need to be signed off before we can actually commence operations on site. We're looking forward to bringing that in the coming months. The guidance is tabulated there for you over on the page 9 of the whole report. As I say, we just crept over the 18 million tonnes at 18.2, which is positive. The sales were at the upper end of the revised guidance at 16 million tonnes, and our equity sales also at the upper end there. So the 103 number we've given you from a cost perspective, as I say, that will be confirmed with the release of the full-year audited financial results. And obviously at that time, we'll be giving you guidance on FY24 as well. So with that, I'll wrap up the presentation of the quarterly report, and I'll hand back to our operator to open up the Q&A. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Paul. If anyone would like to ask a question, please press star one on your phone now. Right, Paul, we have our first question from Chen Cheng from Bank of America. Go ahead, please.
Hey, good morning, Paul. This is Chen from Bank of America. Just a quick question on your production. I understand you provide a guidance on 24th of August. How should we think of your normalized production outlook beyond the weather and the supply disruptions? Hopefully those are behind us. By looking at the run rate from Moss Creek, I think the run rate is around annualized 13.4 million tonnes, so that's a good indicator. I'm just wondering, how should we think about your normalised production outlook from here? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Chen. Look, we will give guidance, as you say, 24th of August, so we won't be We won't be uncovering too much of that right now, but a couple of comments just in relation to the points that you've drawn out there. Yes, of course, on an annualised basis, June was positive to see running at that rate. Of course, we're captive to a 13 million tonne per annum approval limit, so you can't do that across the course of the year. But as I've previously mentioned here in our last quarter when we spoke about the couple of challenges that all our industry and we particularly have been facing, and as you've referred to malls, I just want to draw out a couple of things there. I called out before manning and then congestion impacts and essentially related productivity impacts that stem from that, from keeping the autonomous fleet at Maules Creek separate from the manned fleet as the transition of required as we complete or exhaust all the out-of-pit dumping spaces available to us and transition 100% into in-pit dumping later on in at the end of this next 6 months, the first half period. So look, on the labour side of things, we are doing pretty well there actually, and so it's nice to see that we're making good strides in terms of manning up the fleet, which I'd say assuming that we continue to operate the same level of autonomous equipment at the moment, we're pretty much on the mark now with the manning side of things. That's great. But the congestion impacts we mentioned before, just about keeping those fleets separate, will carry on into this new year. So the question's a good one in the sense that the totals for this year would not be what you should infer for next year, but there is a price to pay from a productivity perspective in keeping those fleets separate, and the reason why we think that price is worth paying is because we like to think we're on the back end of the development of the AHS system, and that with the available time remaining, we can hopefully cross the line of commercialisation with this product and move into a broader deployment of autonomy across our overburdened fleet at Maules. So I'm not giving you a specific number, obviously, because we'll do that in the third week of August, but you shouldn't infer this run rate for the top end, and you certainly shouldn't infer this year's full actual production at Maules as being the basis for next year's. It'll certainly be higher than that.
Right. Thanks for the colour, Paul. Maybe a second question on your coal mix. Just realised that you sold 91% of high CV sales. So I guess that's pretty high. I'm wondering that 91% of high CV, is that due to market conditions, or that's because of your mine plan, or it's because of the coal reservation? Just if you can share some colour on that. Thanks.
Yep. Thanks, Jen. As a general statement, as you know, Werris is the only mid-CV mine that we have, and that will be coming to an end, in the early stages of calendar 24. Small tonnages emerging at the end of FY24, crossing into FY25, from early mining at Vickery will bring in a higher quality substitute, which will be good. So on average, our CV across the business will be going up with the loss of Werris production and the advent of Vickery production. But generally, we've been washing everything, as you know, just to take advantage of the spreads between API5 and GC Nuke. And so we've continued that process throughout the year, and we are anticipating continuing doing that in this new year. Those spreads certainly still warrant us doing that. And to the extent that we have mid-CV sales coming out of Narrabri, say, for instance, which is certainly possible, that's really just a function of blending across the business, to the extent that, as we noted earlier in the year, when we had all those weather impacts at Maules Creek, which curtailed production of high CV coal and meant a paucity of blend stock available to blend with Narrabri, we did have, as you've noted there, mid-CV sales occurring as a result of that 9% of the thermal. So that's the broader way in which that's managed, but we would see the proportion of higher CV in coming years greater as a result of that swapping out of the Werris tonnes for Vickery tonnes.
All right, thanks. Thanks for that, for operation. Maybe last question on the share buyback on page 6 of your release. Just wondering for your capital return buyback for FY23 to calculate 50% of NPAT as the return to shareholders. Should we use 724 million? Or we should use 949 million on the page 6. I guess the difference is the buyback announced from the first batch but completed in FY23. I'm just wondering which number we should use to calculate your FY23 shareholder return. Thank you.
Ooh, I think you need to use the buyback that was conducted post AGM, because the previous buyback was really rounding out the tail of FY22 buyback, and we'd accounted for that in the cash allocation at that point. Chan?
Okay, thanks, Kevin. Yeah, that's all. Thank you very much. I'll pass it on.
Thank you. Our next question is from Caleb Hernia from Goldman Sachs. Go ahead, please, Caleb.
Yeah, morning. It's Kevin and Paul. It's Paul Young here. Paul, the first question's on Narrabri. You mentioned about the move to the 200 series. It took a little bit longer than expected, and the ramp-up's taken a little bit longer also. Can you just maybe run through, how that actually has gone and maybe in July how production's been running at Narrabri on that ramp-up?
Yep. Thanks, Paul. Caleb? Yeah, look, there was a range of things there, just to mention there before, as finishing out 110B, as I mentioned, that was definitely slower than we would have liked, and there was some there were definitely a few ground stability issues there in the back end of 110B, which is pretty annoying given that the first half of the year had been such a positive run rate. But as you know, in that deeper ground, that's prone to happening. The relocation itself, whilst well done, we did suffer some delays with suppliers, and not just components but labour on their side as well, causing some issues. And then as we've moved into panel 203, we've definitely been treading gingerly, I'd say, just because we know we're on that's the first panel obviously on that side, and there is a little bit of washout in the section that you encounter there, just on the eastern side of the panel. And so we're treading gingerly there, as we're less than halfway through to get to square up the block. So we're operating relatively modestly until we ramp up. So we're, as we currently speak, I've got Ian here as well, so he can chime in with some commentary there. I think we're in the sort of 15s to 20s type level now. You're asking for some feedback on the production levels now. That'll ramp obviously as the block squares up.
Yeah, so as Paul touched on, we're about 170 metres into the block, which is sort of around 400k tonnes. We need to get through to around 300, 350 metres just to settle in that, what we call getting square. But as Paul said, we're taking that steady as we move through there.
Okay, that sounds like some good progress in July, so that's great. Next question, Paul, is, and maybe it's for Kevin, is actually on this refinancing. Any further details you can provide us just on the size of that refi, which banks are involved, the rate, et cetera. Just curious, considering that, I guess the items that you're covering there.
Kevin?
Paul.
Paul.
Yeah, look, Paul, I think we went through that process. It's a range of banks. I'd say to you that it is increasingly difficult in a thermal coal producer to attract external funding. The contingency side of that was well supported. The actual lending side of that, we sat there with $2.7 billion on a balance sheet. As you know, we've talked about getting into the US debt capital markets in time, and we were very, very, I'd say, reserved in the way in which we approached that. So we've helped a number of banks achieve their decarbonisation within their own portfolio strategy, and looking forward to to 2024 and working in debt capital markets.
Okay, thanks, Kevin. Last question from me, Paul, is on the labour and cost piece at the moment, which we know is high, and labour inflation is high, and it's capital and capex is inflation is still coming through. So there are a number of opportunities, of course, out there in the market across certainly metallurgical coal for trade sale perspective. So how do you think about the buy versus build scenario at the moment?
Yeah, that's a good question, Paul. I mean, labour costs, yes, as you rightly point out, certainly are still running at vibrant rates and certainly well above the national averages. You know, when we hear about the government highlighting the rate at which wage inflation is acting on average across the economy, you know, our industry, I'm pretty sure, is a substantial premium to that. So, and as you say, capital costs also, we're seeing those continue to rise. So part of the process with our Vickery project is to move in the second half into a phase of trying to validate what we think the capital should be once individual suppliers are pressed to put a number on the table to see what that looks like. So the build versus buy conundrum, there's just vastly different risk profiles associated with that, as you know. Vickery were interested, obviously, for that trade I mentioned earlier to Chen's question. There's obviously swapping out the low quality for the high quality. That makes a lot of sense for us. We've done a lot of work on Vickery, so getting the approval ready, and the board will have a look at the full version of that later on in this calendar year. We seek to put firm numbers for the capital on the table for them so they can assess that. Having said that, there will be a checkpoint next year by which once the tender numbers have come back, we'll come back to our board just to make sure it's within the margin of error that they would contemplate when they do assess that project at the end of this year. And so, yeah, of course, M&A has a whole range of different other risks associated with that. That's about all I can say on that one. But we've obviously the backdrop of that is the buyback, which has also been a very effective use of capital. So that must be in that mix as we weigh up the various streams that you mentioned.
Okay, thanks, Paul. Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, Ian.
Thank you. Our next question is from Stephen Henderson at Shaw and Partners. Go ahead, please, Stephen.
Yeah, g'day team, and thanks for the update. I have a couple of questions regarding updates on the balance sheet and refinancing. In your last production call, you stated discussions were ongoing and you were pursuing refinancing for the company's $1 billion credit facility. This morning we found out this isn't happening. I know Paul just asked a similar question, but if you could maybe expand a little bit on this, what went wrong here exactly? And does this mean you plan on funding Vickery and Narrabri extensions with internal sources of capital?
Yeah, I'll hand over to Kevin. Yeah, that's right. Look, we didn't renew our funding, as I mentioned earlier, and Kevin's there's no problem in dealing with the contingent side of that, so all the bonding and other requirements. But obviously with a lot of cash in the business and obviously the price is improving, there's no doubt that some of the banks have chosen to not participate in the refinancing as we go forward. Now, as Kevin said, thermal coal, and that's no new concept to all of you on this call. Thermal coal has been less appealing from the bank's perspective in terms of how they want to decarbonise their lending portfolios. And as Kevin said, in the end, they have been able to remove some emissions from their portfolios as a result. So going forward, no doubt, so right or wrong, banks view Vickery as being a thermal project. Now, that's not our view of it, of course, and it has a very good semi-soft coking coal product, which we expect to be producing a lot out of that site in the fullness of time. But that's how they perceive it, and there's no way that we could change that based on the discussions we were having with people. Met coal's a different thing, so Just to round out the discussion, from a Winchester South perspective, We still have got positive expressions of interest for funding a Winchester South project in the fullness of time, and we've done a little bit of restructuring in terms of internally from a corporate structure perspective, just to provide some added rigor around how those funds would be deployed in the event that banks commit to a project that's predominantly met coal related. And so it's hard yakka. I mean, that's no news to anybody on the thermal side of things in funding this industry. You can see our peers are experiencing similar sort of dialogue with the banks, and our desire here is to keep all the banks interested in our business as we put more met into it with Winchester South.
Yep. Yeah, thanks, Paul. So, you know, I'd say to you that I'd go back in a little bit of history, but I'd say, you know, we started out with a $1 billion facility when we kicked off Maules Creek, and that was really there to help build Maules Creek. We, through 15 and 17, we refinanced that, and 20 at the bottom of COVID, we refinanced that again. I'd probably say to you that it's fairly challenging when you go to a bank and say, I've got $2.6 million on a balance sheet, and sir, can I borrow some money? Because they look at you and go, well, why do you need that, Mr. Wall? And that certainly played into the conversation. I'd agree with Paul. I think the opportunity, a number of banks took opportunities to say, well, you've got plenty of cash and come back and see us when you've got something else you want to do. But at the moment, we'll take our opportunity to decarbonise. On that front, the contingent side of the world was really well supported, a diversified group there. And I'd say to you that I think anybody who's in thermal coal is going to be facing similar challenges in organising funding from traditional sources, which is why we've kept the line of opportunity or the line of inquiry open in terms of the debt capital markets, and it's why we're running a pretty extensive program with offshore capital providers in discussions there. So... I think that's a summary. I wouldn't say anything went wrong. I would say we took the opportunity to reduce the process. We're always going to reduce the size of that, and that's what we've said to market. But as I say to you, $2.7 billion worth of cash, and most of the capital providers said, well, I'm not terribly sure what you need this for, Mr. Ball. So we'll make a decision to do something else. If that answers your question.
Yeah, no, that helps a lot. It's interesting you mentioned that certainly the met coal side of things and banks maybe being a bit more open to that. I noticed that there was a piece in the Oz at the end of last week, Whitehaven looking at buying those two BHP mines, met coal mines, but weren't able to secure capital is what the report said. Look, I'm just wondering, maybe you've lost relationships with the big four banks. They're not interested in getting involved in Whitehaven projects moving forward, whether they be thermal or met coal. Maybe some comments on that?
I think I'd probably come back and say I'm pretty confident that was an article in The Australian.
Yeah, that's right.
Wasn't it? Yeah. I don't pay much attention to that particular part of what comes out of The Australian.
Yeah,
so
I wouldn't worry about that too much. I don't know where that commentary came from, Stephen. There's substantial interest in the banking community for met coal exposure. So Winchester South obviously is the focus for us. And there's been no shortage of people interested in that. As I said, there is some restructuring we require just to ensure that bank funding, to the extent that banks are interested in met coal only, then it would be structured in a way that would be sympathetic to that need. And obviously, the thermal business being unlevered obviously is a credit enhancing opportunity, I suppose, when someone comes to finance a met coal mine. But otherwise, I don't know where that comment came from. That was most peculiar. We certainly don't have any problem relationships with any banks around town, not at all.
Yeah, oh, fantastic. Well, look, if you indulge me just one more, digging down into the contingent credit facilities, you noted in your report that the big money's coming into some port and rail infrastructure. Can you provide a little bit more detail about what this is exactly?
Well, you'd understand that at the back of this you've got take-or-pay arrangements at Newcastle and take-or-pay arrangements with ARTC. And so your port and rail facilities are really just those arrangements. So each of those providers of that service require facilities at the back of that to support those arrangements.
Yeah, as it's always been.
As it always has.
Yeah.
So there's nothing terribly new or innovative in that conversation. It's pretty standard for the industry.
Right, thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Stephen.
Thank you. Our next question is from Tony Mitchell, Shaw and Partners. Go ahead, please, Tony.
Congratulations, Paul. Very good result. I don't think you'll answer this, but I feel obliged to ask the question. Is Whitehaven interested in either Daunia and Blackwater? And if so, when do you expect to find out when the whole process is going to be finished?
Heavy must be the burden on you, Tony, to ask that question. look, the simple answer to that is that we look at all assets that fit in the strategic crosshairs of the business, and any question around timing or otherwise be better directed to the person or the organisation running that process, which is BHP. We're having a look around, as I've said previously. We look at all those things that fit between those parameters. Can't really comment too much more on that. Of course, Daunia is proximate to Winchester South, so I mean that's obvious why we would want to have a look at that. But beyond that, I think it's best those other questions on timing would be better directed to BHP.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Chris Chew at Jefferies. Go ahead, please, Chris.
Thank you. Morning, Paul. Question just on waste development at Maules. Is there any, sort of deficit that we should be thinking about there given the labour and weather events of sort of recent times and congestion issues and I guess perhaps what looks like accelerated coal sales in the June quarter, or is that all kind of running as per plan? Thanks.
Yeah. Look, Chris. No, nothing particularly there to be concerning from a waste removal perspective. We don't have a deficit. In fact, our inventory of broken stocks on ground is increasing, which is good. And so we had an objective to elevate that, and that's been positive. That's definitely heading the right direction. You may recall there were some constraints there a couple of years ago when we transitioned to a new explosive services provider, and so there was a slowdown required whilst we transitioned to those new products. But those products have been working very well, and so no broken ground stocks, not a problem at all. So I wouldn't be inferring anything for the new year in that regard.
No, I mean, yeah, I think as we indicated, the plan always was in the mine schedule for the year to have a lower strip ratio in Q4. That's just the way the sequence worked. And, you know, we saw a full range of the seams presenting themselves. You know, I think historically people have asked questions about Braymont, but it only represented sort of in the quarter about 13% of what we produced. We were down in the bottom seams and they delivered well. So that overarching, as Paul said, was the average strip ratio for the year sort of panned out as we'd always planned it to be. It was just lower in Q4 just due to the sequence.
Okay, thanks. And perhaps just a second question on Maules as well. With the AHS integration, is there any, detail you can give us there in terms of the confidence around the commerciality and what you're seeing that gives you a bit of confidence that's going to deliver what you'd like it to?
Yeah, I mean, look, we've obviously been on the AHS journey for a number of years now, and we're continuing to push that through into FY24. As Paul said, the outer pit dumps will finish probably towards the end of Q1 this year, and then they'll be running into the southwest area of the mine. And, you know, we've been running up to the two of the larger fleets of gear in AHS, and introducing the manned coal fleet with that, and I guess that's the journey for sort of the next 12 months to see how that integration works. And the plan is to integrate the other larger trucks with that. So we'll have a good firm handle in the next 12 months as to whether or not, AHS has a future at Maules Creek.
Yeah, I think, Chris, the limiting factor there is just that separation. Yeah, how long can you keep the separation of the AHS fleet in the autonomous zone away from the rest of the balance of fleet? And that's easier, of course, when you have out-of-pit dumping opportunities, but we'll have filled that all up, and that's probably a negative in that sense only, because broadly, in-pit dumping is a much more useful thing to be doing than hauling long distances to out-of-pit locations. But when you're all inside the pit and you've got to keep fleets separate, that's pretty dysfunctional from our perspective. So we're not going to see the highest level of productivity as a result of congestion and having to manage that balance. And so that's why I was saying earlier, there's a limited period of time here, that you can physically keep those fleets usefully separated, and B, there is that productivity impact. You just don't want to bear that for too long. So what I'm saying to you is it's not a bottomless pit of patience here. We do need to cross this threshold of being able to integrate the manned and unmanned, as Ian's saying. We are doing that now, which is very positive to see. So that's very positive. I was out there the other day and I could see, not just the intermingling of services related equipment, but trucks as well. So that's positive. But we do need to a bit more work before we can, roll that whole, integration across the whole pit. And so that's, this next financial year, the next 12 months will be the real go or no go type decision.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Glyn Lawcock in Barrenjoey. Go ahead, please, Glyn.
Oh, good morning, Paul. Maybe if we could just dig down a little bit on costs. I know you're going to give us guidance, but firstly, just with Narrabri, the move into 203, I know you're still ramping up, but what sort of cost reduction are you expecting there? Are you still expecting and you still think you can achieve what that benefit of not having to do roof bolting now that you're back in shallow ground? What sort of benefit should that give us relative to the cost that we ended, the last panel?
Yeah, thanks, Glenn. Yeah, look, that's a very interesting area for us as well, because we are transitioning away from obviously the cost basis associated with lower volumes in deeper ground and all the attendant works that go with that. You've started the roof bolting and so on. There's obviously roof bolting still required in shallow ground. It's just in the past we've had secondary support patterns there which have been quite intensive. So we do see the shallow ground being an opportunity for cost reduction, no doubt about that, not just the least of which is obviously more volume, but then, as you say, those types of services no longer being required in the same intensity as what they were before. The problem we have with this, and we'll give our guidance in 6 weeks' time, the challenge here is that the basis of comparison sort of gets lost over time, because we're in such an inflationary environment now. And so, but there's no doubt that certain activities will be required in the deeper ground that are not or less required in the shallow ground. But we will, I don't know if you want any other colour in that you want to describe there.
No, I think you covered on most of it. Yes.
Yeah, it's just if you go back and look, Glyn, just at the equivalent panel back on the northern side, and go back to that year's accounts and have a look at that segment note, you can see the average cost back there. I mean, that environment, I'd love to see the costs associated with that, but that's just not possible. It'll be a higher base just because of the inflationary impacts we're dealing with the human capital, the services. I mean, it's just, but there will definitely be a reduction based on operating the deep ground for sure.
So Paul, maybe I can ask a slightly different one then. So a year ago, you guided for cost to be 89 to 96, and you ended up at 103. Your volumes come in about 11, 12% less than you expected, predominantly weather. So if you don't have the weather impact, what else drove that sort of $11 to $12 cost impost actual versus guidance for 23? Just, you know, if you pulled out the weather, like what would the weather be of that $12 increase in costs? And so that we can think maybe the rest is inflationary, some of it's your manning issues. Just trying to understand what made up that $11, $12 cost impost versus original guidance. Thanks.
Yeah, it's good. We can certainly provide that colour when we put their full-year results out. We'll put a bridge out as we have in the past that'll go through that for you, Glenn. One of the ones you didn't mention there, which is obviously material, is the underutilisation of take or pay just from those weather events, obviously not getting the volume out the port that we would have otherwise expected. So those fixed take or pay costs do bite you. And then just in terms of the numbers that you've referred to that we've given for the 103 unaudited for rounding out this year, I mean, that includes clearly the amortisation of the debt at NCIG, which is a big step up, but that's a sensible thing to be doing at this time as we accelerate the debt reduction at NCIG. All the players are. And that's before we even talk about, Kevin, what that was, $3 US?
It's US $3 a tonne on 14 million tonnes.
Yeah, there you go. And then that's before you mention things like fuel costs year on year as well, which have been jumping around, but incrementally they're over and above where they were at the beginning of the year. So we'll put that bridge in the pack there when we publish the full year results. But yeah, there's a lot of pieces of the puzzle there, not the least of which you mentioned labour and manning. And if I refer back to the period I just mentioned, Glenn, on the equivalent northern panel at this depth of cover, you know, if I think of even about just the wage position back then, I mean, that is vastly removed from what we're paying those same people in today's environment.
Yeah, okay. So the previous guidance, which was 20 to 22 million tonnes of ROM for 23 at cost of 89 to 96, volume-wise, it shouldn't be unrealistic if there's not the weather impact that there's nothing else had gone wrong at the mines other than weather that you can't get back to 23's guidance for 24 and unit costs may be higher than what 23 was, but not as bad as 23 it turned out to be.
Yeah, the challenge of that, Glenn, is the challenge of that, which I just referred to or reminded people about just again from that previous question, which focused on Maules Creek in particular. You know, there is, and it goes to the guidance, which we'll clarify for you on the 24th of August. You know, the tons for Maules Creek will be slightly less than you would otherwise expect because we're willing to take a sacrifice on the congestion associated with the fleets for AHS. As you rightly say, other things being equal, there should be cost reductions when the group is running at those run rates. And that's a fair and reasonable statement, but I just say, I think it was Chen who asked the question before, what should she infer for next year? It's certainly not going to be Maules rate as we just rounded out in the conclusion this year, but it's also not going to be 13 million tonnes given that there is a productivity issue that needs to work out. Werris obviously comes off just to throw that extra one in there as well, and so there'll be a few less tonnes there, of course. We'll have half a year of tonnes there, and then there'll be a gap before you see material tonnes from Little Slithy.
Okay, sorry, Paul, you dropped out there, but can you hear me now?
Oh, I can hear you, no problem. Sorry, where did I drop out?
So what part? Just on our side, it says Werris Creek coming off 6 months, so get less tons. And then
you get
dropped out a second.
Yeah, that's right. You'll get 6 months of Werris next year, but then that falls away, and then there's a gap between you see material tons from Vickery is what I said. That must have been the bit that you missed.
Okay, and then sorry, just continuing on cost, sorry to belabor the point. The dollar a tonne on the safeguard mechanism, what's the dollar getting me? Is that you have to pay to buy offsets, or is that money you're spending to help reduce your emissions? I'm just trying to understand what's the dollar getting me.
Yeah, that's not any money spent for reducing emissions. That's we've just assumed they're the cost associated with the safeguard credits, purchasing credits. And now we have budgeted monies for next year, which we'll speak about when guidance is given, and we can talk about. There's money is there for studies for further emissions reductions efforts, particularly at Narrabri. So we have allocated some monies for that. But what that $1 is referring to is that transition from the site specific production variables versus the industry average in the first year. FY24, that impost is a buck. So, you know, it's just the cost of carbon, right? That's a carbon tax by another name, and that's how it starts.
Yeah, but it's not just, some of it is actually studies, not just a straight give the dollar away to buy credits, is what I'm saying.
Nope, that dollar is just the tax.
But I'm getting something for it, in that you're going to do some studies which may in the long run help reduce the dollar.
No, you don't get anything for tax.
I think what Paul's trying to tell you, Glenn, is the dollar is...
Studies are different things.
...is the carbon abatement, is the carbon credits you've got to buy, the cost of those. And then on top of that, which you'll get in guidance, will be what capital and what operating costs we think we're going to incur as a result of working through mitigation strategies in the business.
Oh, so sorry, I thought Paul said
those mitigation strategies
the dollar a ton included.
No, I said excluded.
Yeah.
Oh, excluded studies at Narrabri. Okay.
Yeah.
And then you would think, you'd naturally think, Glenn, that doing those studies and then doing those work would lead to reductions in future years, not necessarily in 24 or 25.
That's right.
So
okay.
This is just paying the government for the
for the ACCUs, the cost of ACCUs.
Do I at least get 30 cents back?
Yeah, you'll get the tax result back, but that is a small victory, would be how I'd describe that.
Hey, I'd pay 30 cents in the dollar.
Yeah, no,
we will too. We will too.
Give it. Thank you, Mr. Positive.
Thanks again.
Thank you. Our next question is from Lachlan Shaw at UBS. Go ahead, please, Lachlan.
Yeah, morning, Paul and Kevin. Thanks very much. Just a couple ones might have been covered already. Sorry if they have. I was late to join the call. So just to come back to costs and labour. So if you think about labour costs going forward, and I suppose EBAs and pattern bargaining, I mean, how should we be thinking about how sticky some of those nominal costs are likely to be in the next couple of years?
Ian's here, and he's been in the thick of all that stuff, just negotiating our different EAs, which are all staggered across the year renewals. Look, those costs are definitely going to be sticky, right? I mean, once they're there, you agree a 3 or 4 year arrangement. And so when you do that in an inflationary backdrop, that generally yields increases which are higher than what you've seen in the past. And it goes back to Glenn's question just on cost period on period. When I refer back to that same shallow panel on the northern side of the mains at Narrabri, that period was typified by wage adjustments in the order of 1 to 1.5% per annum in that era, if I could refer to it. That is definitely not the era we're living in today.
So I guess recently we signed up all of our, I guess, EAs that were out there, so Maules, Tarawonga, and also GBH, the trucking company we bought. So, and I guess the increases we've seen there have taken us back to market effectively to get some equivalence with our labour force.
Okay, are you able to give us an approximate percentage increase compared to the previous set of agreements or not?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a range there, but nominally about a sort of a 5% increase, and then that ramps down over a period of time each year.
Okay. Got it. That's helpful. Thank you. And then second question, maybe having a look at just, it's obviously dried out, and most people think that El Nino kind of kicks into gear as we move through the year. You know, noting you've written up that Port of Newcastle shipped 155 million odd tonnes in FY22, 132 last year. When you look at industry, like, and yourselves included, potentially, you know, what's the potential, do you think, for volumes to get back to those sorts of levels in the next 12 months or so?
Lachlan, I think you might have got those numbers quite just around the wrong way, I think. The volumes were... the FY22
155 in FY23, 132 in FY23. Yep.
Yeah, that's right, 132 this year. So down a lot. My understanding of that is that, you know, look, there is I think as the weather conditions improve, and they have been decent for mining over the last quarter, no doubt about that, that's positive. And whether or not we head into a... Everyone seems to be projecting sort of extremes going forward. That whether or not that plays out that way, I don't know. But the limiting factor, I understand, with our friends in the Hunter Valley has been just water management, you know, because everybody's carrying more water. You've got, obviously... regulation around discharges of water off-site, and so everyone retains a hell of a lot of water. And in warmer weather, though, people will use more of that in-pit water that they've got, and same for us at Tara and Malls and so on. Look, I'm just thinking that constraint will unwind over the next 6 months as people consume water during the summer period, and hopefully get back to a more normalised basis of production after that. Because 20 million tonnes year on year is actually quite a big reduction. Particularly at a time when you know, the market is, well, it's definitely going to be needing the high CV end of the market in particular, needing more of that coal as you trend into the north of winter again.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Makes sense. All right, thanks very much again.
And thank you, Paul. We don't have any further questions.
Well, thanks, everyone. That was good timing. If there's any further questions, please reach out to Kylie and the team. But we'll look forward to catching up with you individually over the next little while. And, of course, we'll have the full-year results coming out on the 24th of August. Thanks very much. Thanks, operator. We'll hand back to you.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect. Thank you.